Alright, I gotta let the cat out of the room.
Who lets the cat
Jesus
out?
Christ.
I have to. It's so noisy.
Who let the cats worse. Out?
Mow, mow, mow.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com. This is a newscast for Sunday, March 3rd, 2013. And the Webcomic Beacon is hosted at... let me fucking start over. That's stupid. Ah!
I didn't give that to heckle.
All right. And Webcomic Beacon is part of the Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. I'm Fess of ArcherComic.com, and with me, we have a panel of potentials for the new Webcomic Beacon newscast crew. That's right, we've got Terrence McManus back again from the last episode of the newscast from AJComic.com. Average Joe, welcome.
Well, hello.
And
he said welcome straight back at you.
Yes, but I was already here. Ren Rieskamp from Marshmallow Surprise at marshmallowsurprise.com, I believe.
Yep, that's correct. Hello, hello.
Hello, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And if you haven't had enough of them yet, Ben Carver from animationaficionados.com. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
Like I said, if you haven't had enough of them yet...
not a YouTube fan? Okay.
No. Well, yeah, you two, maybe. Joshua Tree. But that's about it. But not when Ben starts singing. This week, we're going to be looking at... Well, yeah, this week. This episode, we're going to be looking back at the last 2 weeks of news and happenings in the creative world. Terrence has selected a few posts, a few articles of news that he's wanted to discuss as well. And that basically that is our emphasis for the new newscast is not just grabbing anything and everything that somewhat fits somewhat relatedly to comics and webcomic creation, but articles we think would be very interesting or important to share amongst us and other creators and discuss about it. And we'll just see how that goes. But this week we're going to be talking about, as soon as I find the window and stop stalling, this is an article. If anybody's heard of the book Seduction of the Innocent by Frederick Wortham. Whatever. It turns out he's kind of an asshole. And Ben, maybe you should take this up since you seem to have a little bit more passion about this particular item.
Okay. Frederick Wortham was such a quack. Back in the day, he makes Dr. Phil look like a legitimate member of the psychology profession.
That's pretty impressive.
Was anyone not a quack in the 50s? I seem to think a lot of people with electrodes and little pads of paper and horn-rimmed glasses.
Well, that was the era when the best way they decided to handle female hysteria was to electrocute women's genitalias with special electrocution kits. But that's another story. With Frederick Wortham,
now you can sell it on the internet.
Yes, you can, Terrence. but only Fess will know anything about electrocuting genitalia, right, Fess?
No comment.
Okay, well, with Frederick Wortham, he's one of these quacks that starts out with a conclusion and works backwards to find data that supports his conclusion versus studying something and finding the conclusion from there. He goes on the opposite end of the scientific method. He had the conclusion that comic books were these evil, horrible things that that were influencing children. And you have to remember back in the day, comic books were read by more than just children. Comic books were read by young adults, by teenagers, and children were just a subset of it. And much like how cartoons started back then. Cartoons were viewed by adults and then slowly worked back to children. But with comic books, Frederick Worthing came up with the idea that a lot of the crime stories that are coming out, and there were comics called true crime stories back then, that these were influencing children to become delinquents and become criminals in their teens. And this was back around the time when, you know, there were kid gangs back then. You know, in New York, there were kid gangs. It's interesting story is Isaac Asimov. Everyone knows Isaac Asimov is, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was in a kid gang.
That's weird.
Yeah, he actually, there was a turf war once where the gang he was in was fighting the gang that Jack Kirby was in.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Awesome.
All of a sudden, so many of his writings are starting to make a lot more sense.
Indeed.
I think Highland was in a kid gang back then too. But basically, yes, there were kids were in like kid gangs, not even like teenage gangs. Like, you know, you were 10 and you were running around in gangs and shit. No one sort of put the pieces together of why. And Wortham came up with the idea, oh, comic books are these evil things influencing kids to be evil. You know, they're giving them homosexual tendencies. Like they found this one girl who basically said, oh, she hated men. And they will go like, well, that's because she reads Wonder Woman. And they didn't go into the fact it's because her stepfather raped her.
Right. Wow.
And Wortham's a quack. People knew Wortham was quack for 30 years. And so when someone finds new evidence that he omitted notes, it's not a surprise that he lied.
Yeah, apparently there was like this court hearing way back when, and then of course it brought out like a whole lot of like restrictions and also didn't it bring about self-rating as well?
Yeah, Comics Code Authority came along.
Right.
Where basically this was a self-regulating action. And this was the best thing the comic companies could do because they had – because you know what? If they didn't say it, the government would have stepped in. Them saying, right. No, we'll handle it was the best thing they could have done to get out of that situation.
However, because that's almost a discussion for another time of it. Basically, it was almost like a mob mentality, basically companies basically trying to make the other company that wouldn't join with them, like was it EC?
EC Comics, yes.
That actually was selling and making money hand over fist with their horror comics and such like that wouldn't sign up with this, basically put them out of business because they're basically muscle arming them, and also like the retailers is like, you don't want to pick up these comics because they're not a part of, they're not Comics Code Authority approved and all that sort of thing.
That's true, but at the same time, like I said, this was the way out of government regulation.
True.
Self-regulation was the better of the two evils. It was either self-regulation or government regulation.
Right.
And once government regulation happens, then it's violations of freedom of speech, then it's all this other shit.
Right.
So it's better that they did this. It's the same thing the video game companies had to do in the 90s when Joe fucking Lieberman and Tipper fucking Gore were doing the same bullshit.
Ben, tell us how you really feel.
it's true, though. When you're down to this path, you have two options, self-regulation or letting the government come in.
True.
And
what happened with this is like a lot of the documents were sealed until like recently. And so basically all this article is about all this evidence is about, yeah, you are totally, you should be not disbarred, but like you should have your certificate of psychology taken away from you for how scandalous this is and outright lying. And almost, you know what, if there is a court hearing on this, perjury, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there were hearings in Congress because Congress only comes together if it's about comic books, video games, or someone taking steroids to hit a ball with a bat.
Apparently.
So overall,
to be fair, this his work was generally debunked years ago.
Exactly.
Case, as Ben was saying. But yeah, it is. It's telling now that the sort of the facts have become a bit more available, and this right. new study by the University of Illinois into it, into his notes, have pulled up just the really the details of just how far wrong.
I know, but we talk about the Comics Code Authority being this evil thing, but it only existed for the 50s and 60s. By the 70s, counterculture took over, and so many people were doing indie comic books in their basements that mm-hmm. basically the big companies were like, okay, screw it, Comics Code Authority, gone.
Well, no, actually, the Comics Code Authority still lasted up until the 90s.
No, it existed as a shell of its former self.
I know, it was
when
still...
the Comics Code Authority seal was on a comic about Hank Pym turning tiny to dive into Jan's whatever, then you know it's a farce.
Right, no, I'm understanding, but I'm just saying for like the actual like emblem on the comics, for like the major comics, I think that stayed on until in the late 90s at the very least, and only in the 2000s, fairly lately, Archie Comics finally got rid of it, and I think after the founder died, and then that's also when Archie Comics started doing a little bit more expansive stuff, like having a gay character in gay rights storylines. And
dude, have you ever read Archie before? Because Archie was like scandalous as hell.
Are you
back
sure?
In the day.
Well, I didn't hear about any of that stuff. Do they have gay characters? Did they
Archie
have a character?
Was sexy and kinky as hell.
But that's not what I'm talking about. All this stuff outside, which I've heard that the actual person that was in charge is like was totally adamant against. Oh, we don't want like homosexuals and blah blah blah. And but then they started expanding a little bit more and branching out, and people. And it's like I do remember. Maybe it was also the advertising where I was just seeing. It's like, oh wow, that's Archie Comics. I'm really surprised. There's a lot of things that changed afterwards. I knew that.
That's true. Like I said, in the 70s is when the Comics Code Authority pretty much got shattered and it was a shell of its former self because it was the issue of Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Brave and the Bold. It was okay. My ward is a junkie where Speedy, Roy Harper, got addicted to smack.
Mm-hmm. But that was a PSA-ish type of thing. They could kind of wrangle
the Comic Code Authority because there's an issue that has Speedy in the comics, you know, taking smack, and right there, proudly on the front, is a Comics Code Authority emblem.
Well, that's as you know, on first issue, another show I do where I review comic books, the first issue of comic books with a couple of friends, we picked up a movie adaptation. Not really a movie adaptation, but the comic book version of The Toxic Avenger. And in it, in like the first few pages, a guy gets dunked into acid and Toxie pulls him.
Turns to the Avenger, yes.
pulls him out, and he's just like this melted skeleton is like approved by the Comics Code Authority. So, yeah, basically this guy is a liar. And so that's.
Have you ever seen The Toxic Avenger?
Sadly, and I was disturbed, very disturbed. But apparently that's Troma for you. Troma Studios.
Okay.
I don't think I'd watch any of the other products.
That movie is one of the greatest movies of all time.
Oh my God, it is so horrible.
So, he kills a guy with a milkshake machine. How awesome is that?
Yeah, there's also a scene where they run over a kid for
I
no
really,
reason other
I really
than
really don't
points.
Want to ask where he stuck that.
Moving on, we have an article here about Eddie Campbell and his rules of comprehension as far as, you know, composing comic pages and such. Terrence, did you want to take this up or get
sure.
it going?
Well, came across this article over at the Comics Journal where Eddie Campbell starts talking about how when he's, you know, dealing with people in the comic book or who aren't regular comic book readers rather than the comic book industry, and they, you know, go on to say they find things difficult to read the flow of where things are supposed to go on the comic page. And Eddie was pointing out that there's a should be, and there often isn't, a clearly defined way to structure things in on a comics page to facilitate easy reading and to facilitate the comprehension of what's going on panel to panel.
Well, before we go any farther, I want to know what the consensus is between everybody presently here, of which how I know is like you go from left to right, top to bottom within a panel, and then you go panel left to right, top to bottom. Is that how everybody basically goes?
That's how I usually go, but I don't read Japanese manga usually.
Well, if you're in a left to right reading country, that's how you're going to be reading. But
I was taken aback when I saw this article and was like, "What do you mean there are people who don't understand how to read comics? How is that possible?"
I've run into a few people who find it difficult to get through what's going on a comics page.
I mean, to be fair.
Even in a cartoon strip, I had just one sitting up on my desktop a while back, and our IT guy was wandering past and stopped to read it. And he read the panels out of order, and so didn't understand what was going on.
that does happen. The problem is the problem is when people try to be too experimental or don't really know how to shore up the space correctly
or plan the space correctly. I mean, I'm
because if you, I find that if you have people talking, you know, people read left to right in most of the English speaking world, if not all of the English speaking world, and to do so, you have the first person talking in the scene always on the left side of the panel if you can help it.
Right. That's true.
So that way it reads better. This is something that a good example is a cartoonist. Bill Watterson never had a problem with hard to read panels or pages.
That's true.
And I think part of it is because he pretty much dumped all that art school stuff and went, you know, I'm going to make it read the way I want it to read.
Right.
So the problem is when people make it difficult by trying to be too artsy with it. You don't overthink the plumbing.
Yeah, I mean sometimes people do it wrong where they have balloons. Really, honestly, they're not doing the left, right, top to bottom thing. You got a balloon that's in a questionable position. Mm-hmm. It's on the kind of on the top, but it's to the right of another balloon that's a little bit lower, but it kind of looks like, so there are some people that still don't present it well. So Terrence, if you want to, sorry to interrupt you, if you want to continue about the article.
That word balloon thing in particular, and I know I've been guilty of it before, but it is particularly rife in webcomics as well.
That's true.
There are a lot of webcomics out there that could really do with a set of rules on how to compose the way that they're presenting their information and their humor. And that's basically what Campbell's giving here, but he's giving it really sort of specifically for a long form style or a long form format. Not so much a strip format in these rules that he gives, his personal rules, these are, and it's sort of to build a framework around what you can then build the rest of your strip around. And it's things like his rule number one here, for instance, is that all the information necessary for the drama of a sequence should be in every panel of the sequence. And he goes on to show an example where there's a chase scene and every single panel on the page has an image of someone running, so that you understand from panel to panel that it's a chase scene, and you don't have the chase scene interspersed with, example, a whole bunch of faces who are running along and thinking or yelling at each other. So you can still see the progression of the action and little things like that. And the placement of characters, the placement of speech balloons, the different way that you should be laying out some of the panels and the way that you should be reading it, throughout the comic in this case, or perhaps even throughout updates in regards to the timing of the work. And it works a little bit better for webcomics for some of these, because you don't usually start reading a couple of pages and then, as you would in a comic book, accidentally flip open, you know, two pages at once and see the surprise before you get there. But you've got the other issue in webcomics of coming in at any point of the story when you discover the webcomic for the first time. So some of those rules in regards to the timing of the reading and the way that things should be set out to be so that they can be understood throughout the work is also a useful point.
I'm working on a script for Ardra right now where I'm planning for the print, and I know that I'm trying to like coordinate that there's going to be two pages that's only going to work if they're on the same page, like when you open it up, the two pages right, yeah, there.
A spread.
Well, it's not necessarily a spread. They are two separate pages, but it's not going to flow well unless
two separate pages of a spread.
Yeah, if they go together, okay, they're still a spread.
But it's like they won't. It would go together a lot better if I think that there are. So it's like when I have the problem of crap, I forgot to add this page here. Now I got to come up with another page. So it's still something to think about planning, because a lot of people these days are working towards the printing aspect.
That crossed a couple of times, and he was able to handle that quite well.
Well, yeah.
Where Phil Foglio shows both halves of the spread and one, mm-hmm, huge spread, and you can view all three of them, or one of the three, or both, or two of the three, and you can see it all there. It's all there for you to see.
Oh, there are ways to do, you know, everything right, but you know, of course, there's a difference between a webcomic and a comic, and if you're making
Phil Foglio does a webcomic.
I know. I'm talking to other people right now. I'm just saying there are ways, and these are things that people need to take into consideration. A lot of times they don't, because they're just thinking, okay, this is my one page. This is going to be an update. It's like, and then it's like when it comes to printing time, if they even thought of that to begin with, it's like, they don't really think about what might have been a spoiler when you open up a page. You know, I'm just saying these are things to consider as, you know, as far as like a storytelling and a reveal point, as well as, you know, using your dialogue balloons properly. I'm just... Yeah, I know Phil Foglio is great and everything, okay? Jesus Christ. Do we have any more comments on this particular article?
Anyone else? I
think we're done with it.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting points from it, but
there's a lot that I can learn.
You've got to go read yourself.
It is a good read.
Yeah. Take what you can.
Yeah, and
definitely
check out
something to read.
Check out the show notes for the links to all the articles that we're discussing. We're going to take a quick break right now because I smell somebody making steak upstairs. So we'll be right back.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Me and my girlfriend are talking about moving in with each other, but that might not happen until this coming fall. Otherwise, we'll have to wait until spring because we're not going to move in the winter up here.
Promise me you're not going to like have the forces of darkness fight you in first issues, and you have to fight them in a cramped apartment, please.
See, this is what happens when you start making reference to things that nobody else knows what you're talking about. It's just not working. So anyway, okay. Moving on. Penny Arcade Penny Arcade Strip Search
by the seashore.
Strip Search airs its first episode, and the verdict is, Terrence?
The verdict is it's the first episode of a reality TV show. It's very, very similar to a lot of the network reality TV shows, or the pilots at least, insofar as it spends the episode getting everyone together in the one place, getting the perspectives of all the viable new contestants, landing them together in the strip search house, which sounds like it could belong to a different sort of TV show, and to be introduced to the rules of the competition.
But it's, you know, I got to be honest with you. Looking at this, it feels more Joe Schmo than Big Brother.
Yeah, you know, they've sort of described it as America's next top webcomic. I don't know if anyone else has seen any of those next top model or anything type of shows.
I try to avoid them.
Yeah, I don't like I don't like the elimination style. I really don't.
It is elimination style. I think,
it is
because they ended the first episode by with the you know classic sort of drama of they've introduced everyone and said hello to everyone and ended the episode by saying, "And one of you will not last the day. You'll be going home."
Oh, so what is their elimination thing? Are they going to do something like have them vote in an inkwell or something, or Lady Justice might come inside you?
I think what happens is what? Hang on.
Haven't you ever seen the Joe Schmoes show?
This is what happens when you make references that nobody knows what you're talking about.
The Joe Schmoes show is this show that Spike TV does where everyone's an actor except for one guy.
Well, it was one season that they did that, and then the second season when it was two people that didn't know. And there was two seasons.
No, there's three seasons. The really? Third season is they think is the guy thinks it's a show where they're competing to become a bounty hunter. And they had Lorenzo Lamas playing Lorenzo Lamas.
Oh my god!
And what it is the elimination challenges they have Lady Justice, like this giant statue of the Lady Justice, and they have to go underneath her dress in the voting room to vote. And for the dress to open, they have to shout, "Lady Justice, may I come inside you?"
Okay.
And this guy thought it was for real. Now he's starting to suspect. He's actually catching on really quick that this is fake.
All right, moving on.
I don't see what's so sus about that at all.
I really like. I forget which network it's on. Face Off, is basically. I mean, it is elimination, but it's a bunch of makeup artists and such that, you know, they're given like tasks, like in a week they have to put together like a costume with fantastic, you know, looking things. And what I love about the show is that more often than not, everybody's working together, encouraging everything, even though they're like competing, they're like not dicks to each other like most other reality shows. It's like they're all artists. They get it. You know, it's like they got their own thing, but there's like, you know, a little helping hand out is like, that's awesome. Like, restores my faith in humanity a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
You might want to jump on Strip Search too then, Fez, because it looks like it is going to be that kind of show where it's task-based, and they've shown a couple of quick clips through that first episode, which seems to suggest there's going to be people working in team environments and sort of helping each other out.
I'll check that out for sure. I didn't get a chance.
It's going to be a nice change from reality TV drama for sure.
But knowing the Penny Arcade guys, I am putting a 20% chance that this is going to be like Joe Schmo, where there's some sort of plant in here and that there's some sort of going to be something, because that's just how those guys are.
I'm going to bet you $5 there's not a plant.
Apparently, there's a cunningly concealed deadly trap somewhere in the house.
So. I can see that.
There is a plant in this.
What would the plant do? Except, like, really bring the room together.
The plant will... Basically, there's a paid person on here that's going to create drama later on because that's just what they do. This is Gabe and Tycho. These are the people that do this shit. That's who they are.
I can't see.
I wonder
them.
If when you've got 12 independent artists stuck in the same house, I wonder if you really need to do anything.
Yeah, you don't.
I don't think you do.
I'm sure there will be. Anyway, moving on. We'll put a link to this in the show notes. All right. Next topic. Well, this is something that actually was tweeted to me by, I think Forgotten Order. I don't have the tweet up here, but she tweeted it to me about something on the EFF. And if anybody knows anything about the EFF, they got involved with MCA Hogarth's Workshop Games or whatever had trademarked the word Space Marine, apparently, and she got a takedown notice or something like that on Amazon, blah, 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 blah. You can listen to our last episode about it. But basically, this is somebody had copyrighted podcasting, and it's going around.
Apple computers?
Trademarked.
Trademarked. Podcasting, and the language is so vague in general. It doesn't. It doesn't make, there's like nothing presented. And it's just basically, this is part of like a troll culture of people that don't produce anything. They trademark things broadly and then they go sue people to get money.
Apple That's computers?
That is basically what's happening, but, and it's basically only the more prominent podcasters have been getting sued. So the EFF is coming in and doing what they can to take about it, which is the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Defending your rights in the digital world. But what they say is, this was, somebody had posted this later, they suggest to support the SHIELD Act, which is a bill from the House of Representatives 845, which is basically to really come down on the people that do this sort of thing. This is SHIELD Act, spears patent trolls' incentives right through the heart. If a patent troll sues somebody, they better believe that the defendant actually infringes a valid patent. If not, the troll could be on the hook for winning the party's full litigation costs, which could often stretch into millions of dollars. And I am totally for this.
I like that. That's good.
Because, I mean, if you got a legitimate claim, there's nothing to worry about it. If you know that you're one of these dicks, you're probably not going to do it.
Well, that's just like what happened with John Fogerty. It's you all know about the John Fogerty case, right?
No, tell us.
You know who John Fogerty is?
No, right? I don't. Tell us.
Really? You don't know who John Fogerty is, Fess?
If I had time to know who the hell this person was, I'd be doing the newscast myself.
John Fogerty is from CCR. Oh, my God. You never listen to the radio. Clearwater Revival. Oh
one. No, I don't listen to the. I haven't listened to the radio except for like NPR. If it's, you know, if I'm in my car for the past 8 years. Wait,
what
10 years.
John
two.
Fogerty.
I know CCR. I don't know band members.
Work every day, listening to the putting his tape in of the Webcomic Speaking podcast. Fest was right along. Oh yes, Fest. That was a very good point.
well, John Fogerty, you know, he quit his original record label and started a new label. And what happened was his old record label sued him because they said John Fogerty sounded too much like John Fogerty.
My God.
He won the lawsuit, but then he had to sue the company that sued him for his legal fees back.
Jeez. Wow.
That's insane.
This really happened.
That makes it even more insane.
it's like when what's his name? When Huey Lewis sued Ray Parker Jr. saying Ghostbusters sound like I need a new drug. And they don't sound anything alike, and somehow he won that one.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's just as dumb as, you know, Queen saying that Ice Ice Baby sounds like Under Pressure. I mean,
it does, though! You're not going to make the Vanilla Ice. There's an extra bean in an argument, are you, Fess?
Oh, moving on.
And that's kind of a lot like webcomics.
Maybe if Fess is making them.
What interests me about the SHIELD Act, actually, is it's saying if the troll will be on the hook for the winning party's full litigation costs. Could that could mean, too, though, that if now you have a big company infringing the trademark of a small guy and they've got a much better legal representative team, you could now try to slay the giant and end up being absolutely crippled by legal fees if you haven't got really great counsel yourself.
Well, there is that,
sort of,
but
fight both ways.
True. But this is also, if you really know you have, and this is something you have to talk about with your, you know, your attorney as well. And it's like, you know, they could make a decision and be like, okay, you really got to look at all of this evidence you have. And it, with that, with this sort of fee shifting sort of thing, that potentially means is that you could add a lot more representation if you really have the evidence, I'm saying. To the point that having that startup fee, you know, for the one side won't matter if you know that you are in the right and you have all this definitive evidence and you can then sort of almost reversely afford the representation. And this and with
years though too. I mean, you wouldn't want to get to the point where you, all right, if I could win this if I put up, you know, $100,000 in the next couple of years worth of legal fees and counsel and that, but I haven't got that. So
well,
I
gotta remember how much money these big companies have. Let me put it this way: it's a company like Warner Brothers has money to where what they spend on coffee a month is what they can put into their legal fees per year, and they can mess you up legally. They can look at you and go like, you know what, I don't like Terrence today. Yeah, let's just shift the money we spend on coffee for a month just to make Terrence's life a living hell, and they can do it.
Yeah, I still think this can, like what you said, Terrence, it can give a lot more fighting power to, like, the little guy. And I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm just saying it's more of a possibility. But as usual, it should not be, you know, taken as lightly. I'm just saying it's a possibility. I'm saying it can be done. But, you know,
I was looking at this in relation to that Hogarth case we were talking about last time. And if it's saying that the defendant becomes liable for the full litigation costs, it just makes me think if this Shield Act was in and someone like Hogarth was having to defend the use of their own usage of the word Space Marine against someone as huge as Games Workshop, you wouldn't want them to get at the end.
Yeah, it might even provoke,
and then getting stung for all Game Workshop's legal fees.
Right. But then again, it's like depending on how the court case goes or what pre-litigation goes for, maybe the out-of-court settlement might be something that'll pop up a little bit more often, or the pre-court settlement. You know, I think I haven't actually read the actual language of it, so. You know, before you go calling your congressman or representative, make sure you read it first to make sure.
And Fess's representative is Senator Stuart Smalley.
No.
Actually, yes.
When you make references that nobody else gets.
That is Minnesota's actual Senator, Fess.
I have a feeling that you're wrong.
No, I'm not.
I got to look this one up.
It is early in the morning here in Australia while we're talking about these American politicians. And when you said that, I could literally hear crickets chirping outside my window.
But at the same time, this would kill and wipe out people who make suits like Dan. Yeah, Dan DiCarlo. He went after Archie Comics because he did most of the early work for Archie Comics, and they found against him that. You know, he did take a hit, but with this kind of law, this would have wiped him out. So that's something to keep in mind, because that's an actual case that I do remember where basically he said, you know, he came up with most of the things that you know about in Archie Comics. You know, he came out with all this stuff. He did the early work on Sabrina, the early work on Archie, the early work on Josie, and then he's like, hey, that's mine. I need credit for it.
But was he working for the company at the time? Was he under?
He was.
But there's a difference between like an intercompany sort of thing like that versus somebody already has their own property that they own. They're not under contract for creation thereof. And then also that's going back in time towards where there that issue with comics was prevalent. I would almost argue that. You read the contract. You signed the contract. You should have known this is how things work. This is what happens. It's kind of a different. Yes, Al Franken is not who the fuck he just said he was.
Stuart Smiley. Haven't you ever watched Saturday Night Live?
No, I wasn't in Living Color guy. Sorry.
That explains so much so instantly.
I think we should move on.
Because you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you.
Excellent.
All right. Now, I feel a little bad that Ren kind of isn't getting in here too much.
That's okay. Don't feel bad, because I didn't get a chance to like read everything up. So
I know. It was kind of last minute, so we'll have you on the next time we record a newscast. I do have plans to... I do have an intention to bring back the newscast at a weekly basis, but for now it's every other week for now. And so far, I'm feeling
covering
really
all
good.
Your topical issues a fortnight late.
Yes.
You know, I was kind of thinking that.
And there are a couple other people I got an email. Terrence had posted on a webcomics.com forum, and a couple of people from there had actually expressed some interest, so I'm going to be exploring them as well. I mean, I'm going to be exploring them as candidates as well. And
I can just wait next episode. So, and today, here we have Brad Geiger and Scott Kurtz dialing in. And
Yeah, right. I doubt I could ever get Scott Kurtz on the show. Brad Geiger has been on the newscast, though, before.
How horrible a human being Frank Cho is for drawing free art for him again.
Here at the Webcomic Beacon, we try not to burn bridges.
Well, then why do you want to talk to Scott Kurtz, master of burning bridges?
Because Scott Kurtz improves everybody's traffic for a while.
He is an interesting fellow. That's for sure.
I can admire a person to honestly say what's on his mind and then realize
Rob
maybe
Liefeld improves comic sales for a while too.
Get him on here.
Yeah, I just said for like one time. I didn't say as a regular guest. You're not listening. Anyway, we're going to take one more break and we'll be right back.
The Geek Life Podcast is, get this, a discussion of all things geek. Technology, movies, television, books, comics, games, nothing is off limits. Join Mike, Paul, Richard, and Melissa at The Geek Life Podcast at thegeeklife.tv.
It's just a difference of how we do shows. I like doing it this way, and you guys do it differently. And that doesn't mean that either way is wrong, except you're wrong.
Well, you can say,
so let me just read these 30 comments I got in our last episode, and I'll just remember about how wrong we were.
Ben, even though you can't produce them, doesn't mean that I don't think you're incapable of taking a joke either.
Then how come everyone laughed when I just just slammed you then just now?
It's a nervous laugh and it's a pity laugh.
No,
you're an expert on pity laughs, aren't you, Fess?
I am an expert of walking into jokes and also making jokes as far as what's funny to me. I will walk into jokes if I think it'll be funny for me to do so. I will also give people shit if I think it'll be funny.
Sounds like one of our old roommates. He's like, I'll do anything for a laugh. Okay, Piero.
His name is Piero? He's already getting a laugh.
I know.
It's brilliant.
So he but would do anything for a laugh. That sounds like someone I've heard of. Tom Green.
Yeah.
I've got this egg and a tub of Vaseline, and I can think of a way to make it funny.
There's a difference between doing something for a laugh and doing something for attention.
Yeah, I don't think he knows the distinction. It's
right.
Okay.
Moving on. I don't even know.
Make a 20-year-old Pepsi clear.
Ew.
That's different. Now,
actually, the break is a good opportunity to discuss what we're actually going to discuss after break.
Oh, I was recording now.
Crack at the Marvel and DC thing?
I was still recording and I was thinking about using most of this.
All right.
So as it happens,
way to break the illusion, Terry.
Yeah.
Darn it, now we know.
Yeah. I like coming back with like getting a lot of like candid response and conversations. incriminating evidence. I'm not sure how to talk about this one because Ben's here, and I'm here, and we just naturally, I think we're automatically going to fucking argue with each other. So,
well, then you have to just let's have the lay down and take it. I thought you knew that by now.
Let's, no. Let's see here. Terrence, I'm going to call upon you again to be neutral in presenting this article before either me or Ben get into it.
All right. Terrence, so before you ignite the flame.
All right, Terrence, before you get neutral, you need to wear this lederhosen and hold this block of cheese.
if we're talking neutral countries, that doesn't work. That'd be brilliant. But to bring it to the webcomics perspective instead of a block of cheese might be an interesting thing to get to after this. The news itself, which is probably
a good harken back to the first one about the seduction of the innocent, is that the latest issue of Batwoman, Batwoman number 17, I hope it's still the latest issue by the time this podcast goes up, it ends with Batwoman proposing to her girlfriend, her longtime girlfriend, throughout the comic.
What's her name?
The person that is her girlfriend.
Because you have to remember
Kate Kane.
Batwoman.
It's what? Kate. Kate Kane is who Batwoman is.
Yes, but what? And then what is her girlfriend's name?
Maggie Sawyer is her girlfriend.
That is interesting because when the title first started, her girlfriend was actually Montoya.
That's right. Huh. Did they change the name?
Huh. No, they're both. The problem is Montoya and Sawyer are pretty much interchangeable because they're both gay cops. They just one's in Metropolis, the other's in Gotham.
So she's got two girlfriends? I haven't been following, obviously.
I stopped following after I think issue 9 or 10. I had to make a decision and stop following some comics because of money.
Yeah, I know that problem all too well.
So in between those issues, in 7 issues, she switched girlfriends and created such a new relationship with this new girlfriend that she proposed to. So that's a very short-term relationship, even in comics terms.
No kidding.
That seems reasonable.
Well, I've known people to propose to each other or one or the other, like within 6 months. So I guess. Okay.
I'm kind of guessing that that's not because Batwoman knocked this girl up, though.
I
don't know. This is comic books, so anything can happen.
No, continue, Terrence. I'm sorry for interrupting you, Terrence. Continue.
No, that's all right. The news item that comes out of all of this is twofold. There was a general, from what I can tell, positive response to the way that this engagement was handled by DC. Whereas in the past, DC's had a bit of a habit of coming up with these progressive ideas, and by announcing that to the world in the launch title with DC sort of crowing, look how progressive we are, look what we've done, we've got some gay people in our comic, and isn't that great, and shows that DC is really inclusive and all wonderful and rainbow and puppies.
Marvel does that too. I mean it's like that. Well, it was for like Gay Rights Month or what was it, where basically, yeah, the Green Lantern, Earth 2 Green Lantern, Ellen Scott was gay, was shown to be gay, and also
it was even more brilliant because we look how DC has got a mainstream
universe segregated away from it.
In a universe,
that's a different discussion. Different discussion. No,
but you are absolutely understated.
This was just a thing that happened. It was no more unexpected or shocking or built up by the publisher as anything else. And it's got a little bit of a positive response for that. At the same time, it's got a bit of negative press where DC is in one comic publishing this gay marriage sort of idea as nothing special, nothing out of the ordinary, whilst in another section of their business, they're employing a certain individual who is an active anti-gay rights campaigner. And people have been pointing some fingers at DC for trying to get best of both worlds and trying to show that they're progressive while still clinging to some anti-progressive ideas.
Well, I think that's a misnomer there, because nowhere in that Superman issue did the Orson Scott Card ever show anything about anti-gay anything. It's a misnomer because
that's not the point.
Let me put it this way. You're not a racist, are you, Fess?
No. Let me tell you what the point is first.
Let me finish my example and then you'll tell me your point. You're not an anti-racist, are you, Fess?
I'm not.
You're not a racist, are you, Fess? You are not a racist.
I am anti-racist. Yes.
Good. You are anti-racist. Good.
I'm ist.
Have you
if
ever
that makes
bought
sense.
Or read anything created, produced, or worked on by Mark Millar?
I have no idea.
I already know the answer. The answer is yes, you have.
No, I honestly
Millar,
don't.
Mark Millar is a comic writer from England, and he has said some of the most bigoted stuff ever on his blog. He actually once did this blog post saying, "I saw a black guy with Down syndrome the other day. I didn't know black people could get Down syndrome."
That sounds incredibly ignorant. I'm not sure if that's...
It does.
It doesn't sound like actually prejudice hateful. It sounds more ignorant, but it doesn't mean that he's not a bigot either. But that particular, statement...
Would you automatically not buy anything from a company that ever hired Mark Millar?
Okay, no wait. So you say that I did read something from him. What do you think that I might... Because I honestly can't tell you who wrote most 99% of the things that I have here. So what do you think that I possibly could have read by him?
Have you ever read Ultimates?
Ultimates what?
Ultimates.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, have you ever read The Authority?
No.
Have you ever watched Kick-Ass?
I watched the movie.
Okay, then you saw something produced by him.
He produced that.
He made that, yes.
Okay, what was his role?
He wrote the story!
He wrote the script for the movie.
He wrote the original story.
So he didn't produce the movie.
Metaphor is crumbling all around us.
you don't get it, Fez.
No. Okay, let me roll with it. No, let me roll with your example. Okay, let's say I did read something that he did. This is how I would react if I find out that something that I like, I later found out that, boy, this guy's a real dick. I would, if I honestly really liked the product, I would then have a much harder time enjoying it and feel kind of weird about having enjoyed it, and I don't think I could ever read it again. That is how I honestly would react to things like that. This is how I react when I've listened to bands and music that I've really liked, and then like maybe later I found out, boy, they just did like this, like there's this one band I really liked and I thought it was awesome until they basically kicked out one of the founding members of the band. And it's like, what the fuck? And then it's like, I have a hard time listening to that band again because of what they did. Because of who they are does impact my enjoyment and the staying power of things that they create, whether or not they bring their personal selves into it. I mean, it can depend. It's like it's different if somebody has just a sort of they have a disagreeing opinion with my opinions or their beliefs differ from my beliefs. It's different from that. But when you have somebody who's an actually anti-gay activist versus just having an opinion, you know,
as far as his opinion can go, is he can only have an opinion. He cannot act on his opinion. He cannot.
We're not talking about acting on your opinion
of gathering of protesting. He doesn't have that First Amendment right anymore because
he can do is
have an opinion. He can only share with himself.
I never said he couldn't have it. It just means that I'm not going to buy anything that has anything to do with him.
You're right. I'm just pointing out that here's a book that he's not even putting any of his beliefs in. He is not writing with an agenda like so many other writers are, like the writers that started Batwoman did. They wrote with an agenda. And here's a writer that's not writing with an agenda, a world-renowned
We don't know yet.
That with accolades, and he's not writing with an agenda. And, oh, my God, isn't he horrible because
of the spare time
he believes in this.
We don't know if he's going to write with an agenda or not. And, two, it's the dichotomy where you have – You got this sort of, it's DC is a business, so they're going to do business moves. It's like, yeah, they're showing how they're progressive in one way, but when they show, it's not so much that he's just, you know, he has an opinion, it's that he's actively trying to prevent people from obtaining the same rights as others, which is it's a different sort of hot button issue. It's not so much as an opinion as much as we're arguing over whether or not other human beings which have a different preference should have the same rights as other human beings. And that is, it's a lot more of like a boiling pot of, of drama and anger and other things. It's not as if it's like a calmer sort of like thing to have a position against. This is, I mean, you know what? It's a number, whole number different one, discussion.
I always feel that it doesn't matter to me if they want to be have marriage taxes on them, just like straight people. That's fine with me. But at the same time, I just have to laugh at how hilarious this is going to end up. Because it's going to be the Chick-fil-A thing all over again, where Chick-fil-A had the biggest spike in their business in the last 30 years. When people are like, oh, this is going to backfire them, and then all of a sudden the lights go around the block for 3 weeks. It's like, I just have to question why you're protesting it, because all you're going to do is going to make this the best-selling comic book of all time.
It is quite possible, but I'm trying to present that. It's like what I'm really trying to do here in this particular conversation is trying to show you how people are actually, you know, a lot of people are going to react to this, and just don't discount it, because whether or not you don't think it's justified or not, it's not about whether or not he has the right to have this opinion or even act upon it. It's just, I'm just saying that there's a lot more, there's people that are going to be shouting up and saying a lot of things about this. And I want to
This is going to be the best-selling comic book of all time now.
I disagree. I don't think know. It. Okay, when you said comic book,
all over again.
There's a difference. Amazing. You can eat that. I mean, this is.
I mean, you
comics.
Can eat it
comic books are already struggling. I can't see anybody who's going to actively buy this. I mean, it'd be different as if it's like Chick-fil-A actually stood up and said, "It's like, yeah, fuck gays, basically," and. And it's like, and then basically all the bigots went to go eat at Chick-fil-A because they're also, yeah, fuck fags. And it's like, it's not like gay people started going over there. They found the people that, hey, they're also against what I'm against. And so the gay people didn't go to Chick-fil-A. And it's like, who's going to be buying this comic? Likely, the gay people aren't going to be buying this comic on principle.
Yes, they will, just so they can get angry about it and do video blogs like all the other people who do this shit. It's that's what they're going to do. They're going to get angry about it. It's just like all the people who bought Amazing Spider-Man 700.
They're likely not going to buy it. They're likely going to torrent it or borrow it from somebody else, you know?
They're totally going to buy it.
I'm just saying it's not a directly comparable analogy. It's all I'm really saying.
We're going to see what the numbers are going to be like. And,
sure.
I'm curious to see what it'll do to DC in general. And
DC does enough stuff to itself in general.
Well, that's true. That's true. It just seems like a poor business move in general.
Yeah. Why would you welcome this sort of hot button sort of thing? You know, it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they actually thought about it.
It really wasn't a hot button thing until someone started searching in the cards past and said, oh, he supports this foundation. Oh, no.
Right.
It's not a big deal. He is known for Ender Game. You know what? All the same people are talking about, all these gay people are not going to buy this book, but they're going to go see Ender's Game as soon as it comes out in theaters. Guaranteed.
You said all. I can't say all. Some maybe, but.
What?
They'll probably have forgotten thinking it's a different Orson Scott Card or something. I don't even know.
But like I said, guaranteed. That's going to happen. Name. Guaranteed. Right? Guaranteed.
You said. Guaranteed. Well, here's the problem with you, Ben. You keep using like words like all. And like when you say all and you say guaranteed, you are immediately wrong, because that is never going to happen. You will not get quote unquote all.
Buy a ticket for Ender's Game.
I'm sure there's going to be some people that will, but I'm also going to say there's going to be a lot of people that are going to protest the movie, or at least just actively like not go to it and suggest other people not go to it. That is totally going to happen, but I'm not going to say all of them are going to protest it.
So let me put it this way. Well, you know,
some people will go, some people won't go.
Tolkien was against gay rights. How many people saw The Hobbit?
A lot of people did.
I still haven't.
And I didn't even know that about Tolkien.
Me neither.
He was a fundamental Christian. He fucking converted the guy who wrote Narnia from being a pagan to a Christian.
Isn't it the other way around? I thought C.S. Lewis was the fundamental.
It was Tolkien who converted Lewis.
I'm gonna have to look that up later.
Yeah, but still, it's also it's also when you get into something like that, there is a difference with something like that when somebody you look at there's a source material, and then there is also everybody else that put the work and effort into it, the person who took the script. It also does matter whether or not there are things within the script that point to that sort of like their personal message. Some people are able to keep things completely separate, like their profession, different from their personal, like you
which
say
Carp
that
does do
like what you say. And that's fine. And I totally encourage, you know, that sort of thing. But it's like, you know, there are people that will bring their personal life into their work. And you know what? That's fine by them. An American, rights of free speech. I also believe in the rights of all the other people to have an opinion as well, sort of thing. So there's this and that all going around. And I understand this. I'm not trying to make an overall marked judgment. I'm trying to bring to light what a lot of people are going to say, what a lot of people are going to think, and sort of thing. So it's I'm not condemning anyone here. I don't even know.
Not quite throw a bucket of water on it, but maybe to bring it back a little bit. It's a simple little move. It's the hiring of an artist and the presentation of a certain type of content in a comic book by the same publisher. How do you guys deal with sensitive issues in your own work? Because the way that DC is sort of has approached the issue may be the cause for their all this discussion, the way that they've not realized or possibly did realize what they were doing when they put this out at the same time as hiring this this individual.
To me, I
see it as this. When I write my own work, I don't try to write with an agenda. Every time I have tried to write it with an agenda, it comes off as childish, sophomoric, and a revenge fantasy. So I'm like, you know what? I don't want to write a revenge fantasy because all I ultimately doing is I will create a straw man of the opposing side, and that's just childish and stupid and disgusting to me. You come back to it 5 years later once you become a little bit more mature, and you're like, oh God, why did I do that?
Right.
So I don't do that. I don't write with an agenda. I don't turn a villain into a straw man of an opposing opinion. I don't do anything like that. What I try to create absurd ideas that have nothing to do with the real world, and just sort of write from there. I try to say, okay, here's my character. He did this for 5 years. This is how he grew up. How will he handle this? You know, I have characters that have different upbringings. I try to keep that in mind. I try to write from their well of experience versus trying to preach.
Well, that's just good character writing anyway.
True.
It's like I'm not going to mention the name of the comic or the person because this is only what I heard. But I did hear that there was a particular web comic, and this person had done a few different web comics at like the same time or whatever. I'm not sure if they're still updating, but I had heard that he had basically either threatened to stop or he did stop at least for a while because he was disheartened that his comics weren't doing what he wanted them to do, and that basically something more along the lines is basically promote Christianity or something along that lines. And so, if this is all true, I had been reading this person's stuff and with that in mind, it's like, you know, that kind of makes sense now. I mean, I could tell that this guy was, had more of a conservative background in some of this stuff. But it was still fairly written all well. Some things I was like, okay, I don't think you're really showing the other side too fairly on this point. But, I mean, there are some ways that people, you know, and if you do want to do a comic that has your own agenda, you know, that's fine. That's your thing you want to do. You're looking for a particular audience or you're out there with a particular goal. Nobody Right. should say that you can't do what you want to do. But if you really want to do something really good, is you got to, like what Ben says, is like, you can't just make a character specifically take the fall. Just in general, that is just bad character writing.
You don't write something to pick a bone with somebody. You have to draw upon the character's well of experiences. You have to think that much about them. You don't even have to agree with your character. A good example is the aforementioned Mark Millar, who, like I said, is an asshole. He's a communist. He actually is a communist. He's an asshole. But he wrote one of the best Captain Americas ever. Or Alan Moore. Alan Moore is a fantastic writer, but he's a snake worshipping socialist. No, he's not even a socialist. He's a snake worshipping anarchist. No, he really is. Alan Moore worships a snake god, and he's an anarchist.
I don't think that's what snake worshipping is, but
no, he worships the Roman snake god.
You know what? I can't even believe what if he said that. I could only imagine that. I wouldn't rule out the possibility that he's just saying that. But you know, whatever. You know, it's I don't really care if he believes a snake will. Whatever, that's fine. I'm an American. I believe in the rights of, you know, right of religion and everything to practice their own. So, hey, did you actually know that I'm a reverend?
I'm actually, I'd rather be a ship captain because then I too can marry people, but I also get to catch fish.
No, I became, there's a Universal Life Church where you can go online and in about 1 minute, you too can become a minister or a reverend.
You know what? I would rather be a Jedi.
Actually, you can also get a certificate from that same website to be a Jedi. I am not kidding you.
That's amazing.
Do you celebrate Life Day with all the other Wookiees?
Yes, fast? you can also get honorary doctorates. You can actually be legally to marry people in your state. They'll send you all. They'll even send you a letter of good faith for you to go to your wherever you need to register to marry people, so you can marry people. It's quite fantastic. They only have two requirements to be a member of the Universal Life Church. One is essentially.
Does either of them require thetans?
The first one is basically is like you promote or you someone along the lines of you promote like the freedom of religion is like I'm an American, I promote that, that's part of the Bill of Rights, yeah. And the other and the second one is basically always try to do good. It's like I'm done. There's nothing about God in here. There's nothing about any particular way you have to live your life. So I decided I'm going to put together the ministry of the whatever.
Okay, have fun with the People's Temple, Reverend Jones.
How does this relate to going? Yeah,
just let me know. Just let me winning. Know when you. Just let me know when you serve out the Kool-Aid. I will not be there.
There's no Kool-Aid, but the first rule is pants are optional, and the second rule is don't be a dick. I would have had that one first, but I thought about the pants thing first, so. I thought it was somewhat relative and can somehow just like distill the tension that has been building up in the angerment as we bring this episode to a close, and we welcome your comments on this episode's web post at webcomicbeacon.com. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. I do want to thank our newscast potentials here on the Webcomic Beacon newscast. Once again, I want to thank Ren from Marshmallow Surprise for being here.
Hey, it's been a pleasure.
And we'll get you in a little bit more next time so you can talk a little bit more. Again, it was last minute, so we'll
that's all right.
I'll put you through the ringer next time.
Oh, crap. I better actually study up.
Prepare your dissertation.
Right.
And thanks once again to Terrence McManus of ajcomic.com. Thanks for coming back.
No worries. And hopefully by the time the podcast goes up, that site will be live again.
Hopefully, yes. And thanks to my arch nemesis, Ben Carver from animationaficionados.com. Thank you for coming on the show.
Any chance I get to tear you apart, Fez? Any chance?
I know. That is all for this week's episode of the Webcomic Beacon newscast at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. See you next time.